When Melissa and I started Cults, Crimes, and Cabernet, it was just a conversation between two best friends about true crime over a glass of wine. It quickly grew into something much more. Our weekly wine night transformed from a casual chat into a passion for advocacy.
We were empowered to take action and use more than our voices to support families in their search for answers. After a year of covering different genres of cases, Whitney and I chose to narrow our focus and take a journey covering cold and unsolved cases in season 3.
So we invite you to pop a cork and grab a glass because we have work to do.
This is Cults, Crimes, and Cabernet.
This episode contains content that may be disturbing or sensitive to listeners. Discretion is advised.
Happy Monday.
Happy Monday. It's just a chill time right now.
It is. I kind of enjoying it, except for I feel sort of lost that there's not anything like pertinent that we're doing right now, but it's a good time to catch up.
Absolutely. And we just talked about this before we started recording that we went from rush into Crime Con, and we have all these things planned, and it's just, we talk about the buildup so much that it's the hurry up and wait, but that's really all it is we are building so many things and we're working on so many behind the scene things, but there's nothing to share with you guys. That makes me kind of sad that we can't share it yet.
Yes. Yeah. We're like, what do we have to announce? A big fat nothing. So yep. I'm sorry. Yep. Soon you will be getting some more information about different projects we're working on. But for now, just the same old, same old.
Yeah.
If you're into Patreon, don't forget Patreon and Apple subscription. You could get ad free plus bonus content and early release episodes. So it's always good to try that out if you're so inclined.
And it's very affordable.
Very affordable. I would do it if I didn't already listen to the episodes.
If I didn't create the episodes, I would sign up.
Totally. What else we got going on?
That's it. Oh, well, I mean, we've got the only thing coming up next is the True Crime Podcast Festival. That's in August 26th through 28th, I believe.
Yep.
And I think they're still doing the early bird pricing.
Yes.
On the
get your ticket.
Yep. Definitely get your ticket. It's going to be a lot of fun. The difference between the True Crime Podcast Festival and Crime Con is, yes, they both have great content. Both great content creators are there. Mm-hmm. But at True Crime Podcast Festival, it's a little bit more intimate. You get to have those longer conversations with your favorite creators as opposed to waiting in line to take a picture and then having to run away because you have to move on to the next session or whatever. You get to have those longer conversations and actually get to spend time with your favorite creators. So we love it. We love hanging out with everyone at True Crime Podcast Festival. And from what I understand, they're going to have lots of great sessions this year.
Eek, I'm so freaking excited. Yes. Like Whitney said, it's much more intimate, but still so worthwhile.
Yeah.
Buy those tickets.
Buy the tickets.
All right. So I'm just going to jump into my wine. I did not forget this week like I sometimes do, which is very weird that I forget the wine aspect of Cults, Crimes, and Cabernet, but that's okay. This week I am drinking, I almost said Hank, but it's Hawk. Hawk Crest. It is a red blend out of Columbia Valley. This red blend is focused and generous, open textures and inviting, offering cherry, currant, red plum and raspberry jam flavors.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of different flavors than what's usually in red blends. I have to say I love it. It is not so dry where it feels like it stays in your mouth for a long after. I'm going to go to 4.5 knives. It's nice. Even for the summer, I feel like this red blend would be a decent wine to have on a summer night.
Sounds like I need to try that one.
You really do. It's really good. Okay. It has a different flavor than others, but
Nice.
I dig it. For my case this week, it's going to be a wild ride, and I'm like itching at the seams to tell you all about it because it's absolutely insane. We are going to start in the town of Eufaula, Oklahoma.
I have been here.
Have you? I've been here. My parents don't live too far from here. Very close.
Yeah.
So Eufaula has about 3,000 people in it. And this is according to 2010 census. And literally, I think my parents live about 30 minutes from the town of Eufaula. Been here many, many times. And honestly, I've always thought it had more than 3,000 people. And I don't know if it's because it's sort of a touristy town. It has a huge lake. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if having all the tourists makes it seem like it's bigger. Because my parents' town has like 2,500 in it. And it's tiny compared to Eufaula.
I wonder if they have, you know, high season. So like in the summer, because of the lake, there's more like 10,000 people in town because...
They definitely do. Yes. Yeah. Because the lake is absolutely huge and people travel all over Oklahoma to come to this lake to either boat. And I know they've got a lot of campgrounds, that kind of thing.
What's the name of that lake there?
Lake Eufaula.
It is likely. Okay. Yeah. It seems very similar to like Possum Kingdom in Texas, where people come from hundreds of miles to go to PK. Same with Texarkana, Lake Texarkana.
Exactly. Yeah. It's such a cute little touristy, but also historic town.
Mm-hmm. And lake people are an entire group of people on their own. It might be very cultish as well, because lake people are lake people. They will be there every weekend. It's kind of like people who like to go camping. Yeah. It is a activity that they want to do every single weekend.
Yeah. And like down here on the beaches, they call it salt life people because they're all about that. I'd much rather swim in the ocean than the lakes. The lakes scare me. But the ocean doesn't. That's weird.
I grew up more obviously in Texas, so it's more lakes than beaches. Mm-hmm. And as an adult, I would much prefer the ocean to lakes because you can just, I want to see my feet.
Exactly. Yes. This area is home to the Muscogee Creek Nation Native American tribe. The median income for Eufaula is under $30,000. So it's kind of pretty low income area, and meth runs rampant in this part of the country.
Is it considered poverty stricken, or is just I was just wondering if the cost of living was that much lower.
Oh, it is incredibly low there, but it is also poverty stricken as well. And little fact about the whole meth running rampant, because that could play a part later on in the story. Violent crimes in Eufaula are lower than Oklahoma as a whole, and it's actually quite a bit safer than the whole United States, even with their meth problem. So that's kind of nice.
So they have meth issues, but they just don't act out on the meth issues. Everyone just kind of lets it go.
Maybe it's never known because there's so much dense woods and all the lakes. Maybe no one ever finds out. I don't know.
Also, that.
I'm just throwing that out there. This week, I'm going to be telling you all about a missing family that led to an unsolved suspicious death. All right. This is the case of the Jamison family from Eufaula, Oklahoma. So we have Bobby Jamison. He's the father. He is 44 years old at the time of his disappearance. We have Sherilyn, who is 40, and Madison, their daughter, who will forever be 6 years old. I know. This is a heartbreaking one. It's very sad that this whole family ended up losing their lives, but the circumstances surrounding it makes it so baffling that I don't even know to be sad or not to be. I don't know. Like, that's where I'm at this case. And you guys will understand why very quickly. Bobby was involved in a car accident in 2002. This caused him to not be able to work, and he had constant back pain. His only income was disability, which I'm sure, you know, if you know anything about our country, it's really not very much money. Sherilyn was diagnosed with bipolar disorder, and she didn't medicate regularly, and this caused massive mood swings. she was also on disability. That was their only form of income, was disability checks each month. Sherilyn did have a son from a previous marriage that she did have custody of most of her son's life. So she did receive child support as well. But about a year before all of this went down, she had lost custody because of some of her bipolar issues that caused her to be hospitalized for a bit. So now she was no longer even getting child support, which played a big role on their finances. Her having bipolar disorder could eventually have an impact on what happened to this family. But like I said, there's a lot of questions and not many answers. It is honestly a true mystery, and I'm not sure if it will ever be solved. It's one of those ones that I can't say, oh, it's so close to being solved, we just need the right person. I don't even know if that's going to be possible in this case.
Yeah.
So we're going to start the day before the family went missing. Luckily, the couple had surveillance cameras at their house. And I guess I really shouldn't say luckily, because honestly, these recordings give more questions than answers. But in this surveillance video, you can see Sherilyn and Bobby walk back and forth from their house to their truck more than 20 times, almost in a trance-like state. You can find this video on YouTube. Just Google it. It's out there a lot. But they're walking back and forth. Sometimes they're carrying things. Sometimes they're just walking back and forth without anything in their hand. But essentially, what they're doing is supposedly loading up their truck for this day trip that they're about to take the next day. Okay. You can see them carrying a brown suitcase, a gun at one point, various boxes, kind of various items that they're just loading up the truck to take this day trip the next day. However, this entire time that they're walking back and forth, they do not utter one word to each other. Very, very quiet the whole time. And occasionally when they're walking back and forth, they will stop and they're in a daze for a few minutes. And they don't say anything. They're completely still, staring off into space and nothing else. It's very weird. There's been a lot of psychologists that have analyzed this videos. And 99% of them say this looks like drug activity of some sort, like they are on drugs, and this is why they're behaving this way. Because both of them to behave that way is a bit weird. They continue to take the stuff back and forth. Eventually, they're in the house, and they assume to go to sleep for the night. Now, the next morning, which is October 8th of 2009, this is the last time that the family's seen alive. They are driving to a town called Red Oak. This is only about 30 miles from Eufaula. Okay, mm-hmm. And it's really like one of those drive right through towns. It's more rural than anything.
Oh, you blink and you miss it?
Exactly. Maybe one convenience store that one family has owned for their entire life. Very, very rural area. And up in the mountains. Okay. So the family is going here because they were going to look at some land that was for sale. The couple had been planning on purchasing some land to put a storage container on it and then eventually live in that container full time. All right. They were starting to get paranoid at this point in their life and they wanted to be off the grid completely. They pulled Madison out of elementary public school because she actually got injured on the playground where she ended up losing her two front teeth and they didn't think anything was being done about it. So they pulled her out of school and they decided they were going to homeschool her. This could be part of them becoming more and more paranoid, and this kind of pushed them further to be like, hey, we want to live off the grid and not be around anyone at all. Mm-hmm. The couple was into some very unusual stuff the weeks leading up before they disappeared. They actually went to their church pastor and had a conversation with him about the fact that they thought they had demons in their house. And these demons manifest themselves into children, and they would see these children at their house. Madison actually had an imaginary friend, which a lot of kids do. That's not abnormal. But they say her imaginary friend was really a demon, and they knew she had a name, she had a whole persona about her, and they were concerned about all these demons in their house. They went to their pastor to figure out what can they do to get rid of these. And they actually asked for some kind of special bullets to kill these demons at one time. Sherilyn believed herself to be a witch, okay? And she would perform rituals.
So would she consider herself Wiccan or...
I'm not just quite a sure. Witch. Okay. Just a witch. She had a witch's Bible. She would perform rituals trying to cast out these demons, that type of thing. She also was very paranoid to the point where she thought her neighbors were poisoning her black cats. She even spray painted weird messages on that storage container I was talking about. It was in her yard, and she wrote about the cats and that people needed to stop killing them, and they definitely shouldn't kill cats from a high priestess witch like her, because that's just not going to go well for them, type of thing. Almost like underlining threats. The day that they went missing, family seen packing up all their stuff in the truck the day before, like I talked about. And this is 30 miles away. To me, that's not long. I probably wouldn't even pack anything besides my purse.
Yeah. Nope. Maybe a snack.
Yeah, definitely a snack. But for them to be taking 20 to 30 trips back and forth, they're packing a lot of stuff for this day trip. They meet with an associate to this landowner. The land's about 40 acres that's for sale, up high up in the mountains, very secluded. And this is the last time that they're actually seen by someone. Apparently, it all went fine. That associate came forward. He's not a suspect whatsoever. They're on their way home, and for some reason, the family stops in the middle of the dirt road and abandons their vehicle, and they never return to it. It's a white truck. All the doors are opened. However, this was after the investigation started.
That was my question, is was it found with all of the doors open?
No.
Or did they open it?
They opened it. The doors were all closed, and it was locked. Family is reported missing a few days after their disappearance, when they didn't check in, no one can get a hold of them. But it wasn't until 8 days after they went missing that the family truck was found. And it was found on this dirt road, and people driving by, I mean, it's not a crazy busy road, it's a dirt road, but still people go back there to, you know, they live back there and such. People had seen it. They just assumed it was a worker's truck, and that's why it's there, because it was all locked up and everything.
And it looks like a work truck. There's
definitely
lights. It's an older model GMC or Chevy. I can't tell which one. They're same body style, basically.
Yes.
But it's got the lights on the front, in the front grill, the big lights, spotlight kind of look. And then it's got the yellow light on top for, I mean, it looks like a worker's vehicle.
It definitely does. So no one really thought anything much of it those first few days that it was there. And then eventually, since it's in this middle of this dirt road, someone eventually calls the police. Hey, I don't know why this car's still here, but can you come out and take a look, maybe get it towed? This is when they discover this truck. Well, when law enforcement discover this truck. And inside is the family dog, okay? It has been there for 8 days. This dog is severely dehydrated, malnourished, but he's alive. His name's
Good.
Macy.
Good.
I do not think the dog would have made it another day.
Oh, good.
But also in the truck was Bobby's wallet, Sherilyn's purse, all of the family's jackets, their cell phones. Nothing really indicated a struggle at all. Nothing in the truck indicated that they were planning to be gone a long time. Like, they weren't planning on already starting their life off grid. There wasn't like that much stuff in there. It was just the normal stuff you would take on a day trip.
Yeah, they were still in the scouting phases of trying to find somewhere to live.
Yes. Here's what gets a little bit weird. Inside the vehicle, underneath the seat, was $32,000 in cash. Okay. Now, these two lived off of disability, and their families say they were not known to have this much cash ever. And the family do state that they were having financial troubles leading up to this date because of no longer getting child support. They were behind on their rent. So they're not doing that great. So how in the world do they have $32,000 in cash?
Were they hoping to use that $32,000 to purchase the land?
That could be a good possibility. I mean,
which that's not how that works. I mean, I guess
exactly.
I mean, I guess in some places you could, if it's this kind of rural area where it's okay, here's a stack of money. Can I have this little section? And it may never go to the courthouse and deed change names.
But seems dangerous to me. I hope they wouldn't just give their whole life savings over to a perfect stranger. But
you would think on a verbal agreement that, hey, you can have this, but we've seen it before.
Oh, I know. I know. Everyone. Yeah. But especially rural places like that, their word means everything. So it's just like, hey, I'll sign a paper.
Yeah.
Binder paper at that. So, yes, I mean, they very well could be putting this deposit down and that's the money. But where did they get the money? I mean, now.
Very good question.
So Bobby, there was no record that Bobby ever got a settlement from his car accident, but maybe he did and the family just didn't know.
But if there's no record, it would be on record that there was a settlement.
Exactly.
And that a check was cut and then the check was cashed. I mean, they don't just slide a silver briefcase across the table and say, be quiet. There's no paperwork here.
Exactly. There would be paperwork to say a check was cashed or this is what happened. Exactly. Yeah. So it's very, very weird that they had this amount of money. Another item that was found in the truck was an 11-page handwritten letter written by Sherilyn to Bobby asking for a divorce. And she goes into everything she doesn't like about him and all this kind of stuff like this. 11 pages. All right. Now, to me, this is very suspicious I've never written a letter that's 11 pages. So I think this is a lot. It's a lot to be writing about how much you just hate your husband and how horrible he is. That's a lot. On the caveat of that, Sherilyn's friend says, hey, this was just part of what she did. She would express herself in letters. She would never actually give it to the person, but kind of as therapeutic.
So it's venting.
Venting, yes. But who knows if Bobby found that or not? What if he read it?
But if all the things to take with you on this day trip to look for land to further your life with this person, that's what you're taking with you?
But maybe it was just in her purse and she kept it. I don't know how it was found or anything like that.
Okay, so maybe if it's in her purse and she kept it so that he wouldn't stumble upon it in their home, sure. Yeah. But I feel like if you're going to write those kinds of letters and not give it to the person, then maybe you should destroy it afterwards so that you get it out. And then part of that therapy be, I'm burning it or I'm sending it through the shredder or I'm going to rip it into pieces. And now those feelings are gone.
Yeah. And let it go into the earth.
Move on.
There was some loose trash around the truck, but nothing that would lead investigators to believe that they were taken against their will at all. The keys were also in the truck as well. Okay.
So the keys were locked inside the truck?
Locked inside the truck. Okay. The truck did not run out of gas. It had been in perfect working order when authorities started it up and everything. Zero signs of an accident. So obviously none of these can be reasons why the family suddenly stopped in the middle of nowhere. There was also a GPS, like one of those handheld ones. It actually, had their location that they were going, had their location back home. So they can see each time the family stopped and kind of where they stopped and until they just got to this point and stopped in the middle of the road, which is a very good indication like, hey, this is where they stopped and this is kind of where they were going type of thing.
Was it like a TomTom kind of like a driving GPS system or was it one of those you would use for geocaching?
No, it was like a driving one.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Like a TomTom. Cause this is back in that day when those were like freakishly popular and we just didn't use our phones like we do now. Finding this vehicle is in my mind, the start of the whole investigation, because honestly, before that, a whole family missing, they could have went on vacation, but finding this vehicle is definitely gives authorities a place to start looking. Mm-hmm. And they really did search like crazy. They had over 100 volunteers searching for the family in the days after finding this vehicle. This was by foot search, by dogs, by air. They had ATVs out there. I mean, wow. Literally any aspect of the searches that we know today, they had it for this family because they assumed the family just got out of the vehicle, maybe to look around, and got lost. That's the easiest explanation in my mind. The family and authorities were thinking that they faked their own deaths or that they went into witness protection program. And at first I'm like, what the heck? This is just a normal Oklahoma family. Why would they even think that? But there's some stuff that is I'm going to explain that's going to make it seem like, okay, maybe they were in over their heads. And the entire reason for this whole witness protection program theory was because there was a lawsuit that Bobby was suing his father, whose name is Bob Dean Jameson. And this was about 6 months before the family disappeared.
Okay.
Bobby had received a protective order against his father because, in Bobby's words, he was fearful of his dad killing him and his family, which apparently, on what Bobby states, is that his father had threatened multiple times to kill him and his whole family. Bobby also states that his father hit him with his vehicle.
Yes. Okay.
Yes, exactly. I'm like, well, that's okay. Escalated quickly.
Yeah.
Bobby was suing his father for unpaid wages because apparently he worked at his parents' gas station in the Oklahoma City area for years without being paid, in the thoughts that either when the gas station was sold, he would receive half of the sale price or the gas station would eventually be his. But none of this happened. The parents sold the gas station. Bobby never received a dime, and this is why he was suing his father. Now, how the heck does witness protection program come into all of this? Well, Bobby states that his dad was into a huge meth ring. He was into gang-related activity and prostitution. Yeek. So he's saying his dad was high up enough to be running this whole thing, and that is why he was scared for his life and possibly knew more than he should have, and that's why they went away into this witness protection. That has been unfounded like crazy. They did not. Could he have uncovered something? Could law enforcement uncovered something and then essentially sent them away while the investigation was ongoing? That has been completely debunked. Happened.
I feel that if law enforcement was involved with this witness protection situation, there wouldn't be a vehicle in the middle of a road somewhere. They would have just disappeared.
Exactly.
From their home. This adds a whole nother level of law enforcement having to use taxpayer money for something else. Like, there's a whole lot more involved to witness protection than just leaving a vehicle in the middle of a road.
With the dog inside, you think the plan would have been a little bit better executed if that's what happened.
I would agree.
So Bob Sr. here, and then at first it was thinking, oh, did Bob, you know, do something to him because this lawsuit was going on? However, Bob was apparently in the hospital at the time that the family went missing, and he actually died 2 months after. Oops. So he never knew what happened. Yes, he was in a legal battle with his son, but I still feel like he cared for his son enough because he actually left his entire estate to Madison, who, you know, was missing with her family. I don't know if that was the only grandchild, but obviously he cared enough about Madison to leave his entire estate. And if he was part of her disappearance.
That doesn't mean he had a relationship with his son.
That's true. Very true. If
that's the only grandchild and they had to leave it to somebody, or the state gets it. So it's, well, I hate my kid, but granddaughter didn't do anything wrong. Let's put her name there, you know?
That's very true. Very true.
But I don't think that he would have something to do with their disappearance if he was leaving
all of it. Because then eventually it would just go to the state if. You know, Madison never claimed it. So, Okay. So I really doubt this Bob Dean Sr. had anything to do with their disappearance. This is just like the bare tip, very first theory we're going to talk about. And there's a ton more.
Okay.
Case goes cold. They have zero leads. They just know where the family was at the last place that they saw them. But really, other than that, they have no clue to where this family is. They assume they wandered off, got lost, and died by the elements, I guess. They really have no clue.
But I feel like they would have found something out there with all of their, or at least a trail from the dogs if they wandered off. They would have something.
Yes, but nothing. So 4 years goes by. and some hunters are out there because this is very heavily hunter area, and this is how all people get found, I swear. The remains are found, all three remains, just 3 miles from where the family truck was found that day, okay? And because of the state of decomposition, it honestly takes quite a while before they get positively identified. But they do, and it is Madison, Bobby, and Sherilyn.
How did they identify them? DNA?
DNA, yes. All three of them were found laying side by side, face down. Why would they be like that if they just were succumbing to the elements or anything like that? They wouldn't be side by side, face down. And there's reports that a dead dried flower was laying on top of Madison's remains. Now, how could that be there 4 years later, though, is what I'm... But they say it looks like it was placed there. But 4 years?
Or someone was returning to the site and leaving it regularly.
Oh, shoot. I didn't even think about that. I'm like, there's no way that flower would still be there.
Yeah, I mean, it would blow away... Well, I mean, not even animal. Think of weather.
Yes, I mean, yes.
That's Tornado Alley. So
yeah,
there's
big
wind
storm
there.
The flower would fly away.
Yeah, there's wind there. But if someone's regularly visiting this as a grave site or as a marker, let's look at it as from a serial killer standpoint, maybe they're returning to the scene and revisiting this crime over and over and over again. And maybe they feel remorse over killing a child.
That's true.
And they leave Madison flowers.
That's true. I never even thought about the killer returning to the site. That's weird that I never thought about that. I'm just like, this is weird. I don't know where this flower is here, but another really crappy thing about this is because they'd been out there for 4 years with the elements, with the animals. They couldn't say what the cause of death was. So it was all undetermined. They can't even tell if it was foul play or not, which absolutely drives me crazy because how in the world would they line up face down? The only thing that they were able to say that they could tell was Bobby had a hole in the back of his skull. Now, they say it could be from a bullet, but it could just be animals. And literally back to square one.
Okay, this is the early 2000s. So, early 2010s
even. Yes, I was like, not even super early 2000s.
Technology has advanced enough at this point for them to be able to tell whether this is animal predation or a bullet wound or a weapon of some sort. Because if it was animal predation, one, they most likely would not be laying in a straight line. If an animal attacked or helped the decomposition process, for lack of a better way to describe that, they wouldn't be straight lined up. They would be drug off or in another location, or there would be other teeth marks on other parts of the body. That doesn't make sense to me.
Doesn't either. And I know they didn't find like all of their remains, but it's still weird to me to think about if obviously animals were in the area, you know, how did they know they were lined up? Like, I just, to me, it's so weird to think about if animals had anything to do with it, how they would still be, all the remains be lined up. Like you said, it's weird. Let's talk about some of the possibilities that could have happened to them because there are a ton of them. I'm going to start with kind of the ones that are, in my opinion, the most likely going to the most outlandish. All right. First, we have murder-suicide from either side. So we have that letter from Sherilyn to Bobby stating she wanted a divorce. You know, and she has her mental illness issues. So could she have killed Bobby and Madison and then committed suicide? Or even the other way around, did Bobby find that letter, freak out, kill his wife, daughter, and then himself?
That's a possibility.
Possibility. I don't know why they would be lined up. You know, maybe the two died first and then...
Why would he take them 3 miles away from the vehicle if that was the intention?
And it's pretty treacherous terrain up here. We're talking about hills, mountains. Like, this is real, real woods. With a six-year-old, do you know how long it would take you to walk 3 miles with a six-year-old in heavy terrain like this? A long time.
3 miles on a sidewalk would take you at least 4 hours.
I just keep thinking about Z walking.
Yeah, like, my legs are so tired.
Exactly. So, okay, this could be a possibility. Either way, I swear, because they were both paranoid. They had mental illness. They could have possibly been on drugs. We don't really know. So definitely this is a possibility. However, I want to just throw a caveat out there that no gun was recovered from the area.
Okay, so there goes the murder-suicide by gun theory.
By gun, yes. Or unless maybe someone found the gun, found it. Picked it up. I don't know.
Okay, if someone comes across this scene, you find a gun and three dead bodies, and you're like, you know what? I was really looking forward to growing my gun collection, but I'm not going to report these dead bodies. What does that say about that person?
Really crappy. That's the end of it. Yes. Okay, so, and then I just can't get over the lining up, the face down. How would the person that committed suicide, how would they kill themselves and then lay face down either? To me, I wouldn't be worried about my placement if I just murdered my family. I wouldn't be like, oh, we really need to be in a straight line. I wouldn't be thinking like that. So,
yeah, to me, that the
it doesn't seem.
And that just seems something I would feel like it should be classified as homicide because they've been placed here.
Exactly. I agree. Okay. So in my non-expert opinion, I don't really think murder-suicide is it. However, I'm not an expert, so I really, my opinion doesn't matter. But all right, next plausible explanation was this an accident? Did they get lost? But then again, why did they leave everything they own in the vehicle? If they were going to go out walking, exploring, bring your jacket, bring your cell phone, bring the dog.
Why didn't you bring the dog that you brought on the trip for a walk?
Yes. And this dog was like a cherished family dog. There's many pictures of Madison with this dog. And I think she got the dog when they pulled her out of school because they knew she was going to be home a lot. She's an only child. Really, because she's the only one there. So they bought her this dog and she loved this dog. So even if the parents were like, oh, just leave the dog in, I feel like Madison at 6 would be like, I'm taking my dog with me.
Yeah. It's like and being punks.
Exactly. And why wouldn't they take her if they're walking around? The dog could be helpful. It's not a big dog. It's like a Pomeranian or something small.
But if you're a pet owner, you know that the dog has to use the bathroom. If you're going to be out yes. and around, that's a perfect time to walk your dog to use the bathroom.
Exactly. So, and then we have, okay, was the weather horrible or something? Nope. The weather had a high of 65, a low of 50.
If the weather was horrible, they wouldn't be out exploring.
Exactly. Exactly. Maybe, I mean, 50 is a little chilly. I mean, these are kind of outdoorsy people. They're about to go live off the grid. I feel like they can handle 50 degrees.
Well, 50 degrees isn't cold enough that they've succumbed to the elements in one night.
Exactly. Exactly.
If they got lost, they might have to huddle together to keep warm for the evening until they have daylight to get back to the vehicle or something along those lines. But they wouldn't have died of hypothermia in one night at 50 degrees.
I agree. And then, okay, if it was an accident and they did, you know, get lost, why are they lined up? Like, it's still mind-boggling to me, the whole lining up thing. Mm-hmm. So, not saying that this one's not possible. To me, this is probably the easiest explanation. However, it still seems weird.
Mm-hmm. Is that the last theory? Because I have another question.
Oh, no. Those are just normal theories. I said we're eventually going to get to crazy theories.
Okay.
So far, like in my mind, those are both kind of plausible. It could happen. Can't really be ruled out. But there's a lot more. The sheriff in this case stated at one time that usually they go through a couple of leads figuring out, you know, different theories and stuff, and they cross them off because they just couldn't happen. He has never been able to cross off one theory when it comes to this family because they have no clue. And most times, many leads are a good thing, but this made his job almost impossible.
I mean, it's the fact that he can't narrow it down, that's kind of like too many hands in a cookie jar situation.
Exactly. Were they meeting someone for a drug deal that possibly went wrong, considering they had $32,000 cash on them?
Okay. But why would you bring your kid for that?
Because maybe they didn't have anywhere else for her to go. And they were like, oh, yeah, it's just going to be Quickster.
Yeah, sure. But maybe just send one parent instead of the whole family trip.
That's true. That's true. Or maybe they wanted two birds with one stone. Hey, let's go look through at this property and then we'll just make a little cash exchange. Because remember, I told you the brown suitcase that is very clearly visible. They never found it. Now, what was in the brown suitcase? But it wasn't in their vehicle. It wasn't found with them. I mean, what could have happened to the brown suitcase? Her gun was never found either.
Do you think that the brown suitcase had meth in it and they sold the meth for the $32,000?
But then why wouldn't the drug dealer take the $32,000? If he's going to kill them, take the drugs, he might as well take the cash too.
The car was locked. I don't know. Yeah.
Bust a window to get $32,000.
I mean, if that's my line of work and I am an unsavory character anyway,
breaking a window is nothing.
Yeah. That would not be the line I draw, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it was known that they were in need of money. And the family does state that Bobby said he had a way of making some quick cash. They had no idea what it was, but I don't know. Okay. So, I mean, could that have happened? I don't know. And why kill the whole family and not take the $32,000?
Line them up nice and neat and not just leave them where they land.
Where they are and at their vehicle. Why go 3 miles away?
Unless Bobby's like, hey, I hit it out here. We have to go get it. And he rounded everybody up and said, all right, well, everyone's going to go out here to whatever.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. That's movie stuff.
It's very theatrical and dramatic. But if that's the case, he goes out there. Obviously, they didn't find whatever they were looking for.
Yeah.
He murders everyone. I would then return to the vehicle and ransack the vehicle looking for what I'm looking for. Unless this dude also got lost in the wilderness.
And they haven't found him yet. Here's another thing that kind of suggests the whole drug theory. The couple lost a significant amount of weight in the months leading up to this. They almost look at, oh my god, emaciated. Is that how you say that? I think so. Emaciated. Like, they lost a lot of weight, which goes in line with them using meth. So, and the whole surveillance video with them like in a daze just going back and forth.
Okay. Can they test what remains are left for any sort of toxicology? Because if they were longtime meth users, I would assume that it would be in the bone marrow.
I don't know how any of that works.
I would assume. I mean, I don't know either. I could be pulling that out of my butt.
But I don't necessarily know they were longtime users because they dropped the weight very quickly in the month or two leading up to this.
Okay.
That's what the family states, at least. So could they have gotten into this meth scene, started selling it to make extra money, and got hooked themselves? Maybe. The $32,000, in my mind, is one of the strangest aspects of this entire case.
Yeah, that's like the biggest red flag. It's biggest. The $32,000, then them lined up in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. Yeah. So I told you that the couple was very paranoid, so maybe they never put their money in a bank. But then why would they be behind on rent? I would just take the money from this $32,000
and go pay your rent.
It makes zero sense.
Then you look into like laundering and things. What if their rent? What if they're $4,000 behind in rent, and then you have to verify where you get this $4,000 in cash?
Okay. And then maybe they weren't paying their rent to save up money because they were planning on buying this land. And they're like, oh, whatever. We get evicted. We're leaving anyways. Because they already had the container at their house.
And maybe it's something along the lines of, we don't really give a crap about our credit score because we're going to buy this in cash because we have $32,000 in cash.
Who cares about credit score when you're living off the grid? No credit is needed.
Nope.
All right. Next theory, did they drive up there, check out the land that they wanted to buy, and maybe run into some people that or saw something that they weren't supposed to see? Because this area is notorious for meth labs. Most of those people live off the grid because they want to just have this meth lab in their house. Okay. And I actually have some stats about that. What do you have before I give you stats?
The hunters. Are they actually hunters? Are they hunters hunting for meth deals? One. Two, are there any meth labs local in that area that they may have stumbled upon a deal? Specifically, how close to where the bodies were found or where the vehicle was found is the nearest meth lab that is on record for them to stumble upon something?
I don't know how close the closest meth lab is.
Sure, they don't make maps of that.
Well, there are some kind of things that give you the address of meth labs that they have busted. Anyways, so this mountain range, this area that they're at is literally notorious. But here's a few stats as far as Oklahoma goes for meth labs. So 2009, this is when the family disappeared. Mm-hmm. There was 743 meth labs taken down in Oklahoma. 743. Like, that is a ton. How many are there if those are the ones taken down?
Right?
That is a...
Although, for all of Oklahoma, is that really a big number? I mean,
there's not a lot of people in Oklahoma, I feel like. There's just a bunch of small towns, very little big cities. But that's where I feel
and
like
meth labs are. For 1 year, that is a big number.
1 year, all right? By 2011, there was 913 meth labs. So we're getting to almost 1,000 meth labs taken down. You got to think, I mean, I don't know how many drug task force people there are.
Probably not very many.
Not very many. Like, where that's there. What I know, like, ATF.
DEA.
Yes. I'm just like, what the crap? That's a lot. It has went down significantly now. There is a lot of, I wrote it down, but now I forgot. There's a lot of initiatives to stop the amount of meth. And now I think they're down to like 200 or 300 a year, but it's still.
Well, it's because they made it harder to buy the ingredients to make meth.
Yes, yes. A lot happened in that 2009, 2011, that time frame when they were seeing these type of numbers. They were like, hey, we got to figure out some crap and get this.
Yeah, because it was a pandemic at one point. It was an epidemic.
Yep. Okay, so now we're going to go to the next story. So that's a possibility. I mean, it happens. I feel like the likelihood of running into something kind of slim to none. But it's still a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So now, because I am what I would call a non-believer in supernatural entities, this is kind of my like theory that I believe the least in. So if we remember that the family's house was being apparently haunted, not only ghosts, but demons. And I didn't mention this earlier, but there was a fairy with wings that was also... like haunting the family, and it was apparently large. And yes,
a large fairy.
Large, yes.
I thought fairies now, were small.
Apparently this one was big. Oh. Maybe it was an angel, I don't know.
Okay,
so if you believe in this, then maybe this could be a possibility. But were these demons like haunting Sherilyn and Bobby themselves? Mm-hmm. And they were, you know, after them trying to banish them with all of their crud,
sage, and whatnot.
Yes, maybe they got angry and came after the family. All right.
Okay, so it chased them into the middle of nowhere, laid them in a straight line, and murdered them.
Yes, I don't believe that one. Okay, so I should say this next one is a possibility. That one's my least favorite out of all of them.
I really feel that law enforcement would have a hard time marking that one off the list, just because you can't really corroborate that didn't exist.
Yes, none of it. Okay, now because Sherilyn was witchish, did they belong to a cult?
Or the occult?
It's weird, and you know how we love our cults, and I guess, well, I shouldn't say we love the cults, but we're fascinated by them. Could this couple have been mixed up in some satanic cult-like behavior or a group? And this is why. Bobby was actually using a satanic Bible for rituals to also get the demons out of their house. So this is not absolutely out of the craziness, because we've heard crazier when it comes to cults.
Are there any known active satanic groups or occult members or active cults in that area at the time that we know
there
of?
Is. I mean, there's quite a few. I mean, so I grew up in this area. Well, I didn't grow up in this area. It's been a few years in this area. And I heard about a few out in the middle of nowhere that would do seances and that type of thing in the middle of the woods.
Okay.
So they're there, definitely.
Okay.
Okay. So definitely a possibility. All right. Sure. We're not done with our theories yet. See, and it just keeps on going because of their lifestyle, their mental illness, the things that they were involved in. It's just, it goes on and on.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So the next one could have some merit as well. All right. So a few months before the disappearance, the family had a boarder, someone that lived with them. This guy either did work for them, a tenant. Yes, okay. That kind of. I don't know if he paid them in cash or if he did work for them.
They had a guest.
Yes. Well, apparently this guy that lived with them found out that Sherilyn was part Native American, and he had a big problem with anyone that wasn't white. So this is what this report says. Okay. So after something, when he finds out, kind of shit hit the fan, they start fighting. Sherilyn pulls a gun on him to get him to leave the property. And she shoots his feet or something like that to get him to leave. And makes him leave. Okay. This was months before the disappearance.
And this is the same gun they never found?
Yes. This is the same gun they never found.
Okay.
All right. I believe she called authorities to let them know of the situation, that she shot at this guy. He wouldn't leave, to kind of give them a heads up in case maybe he called. I don't know. But there was a report of this incident months before the couple disappeared.
Okay. Do we know if this man was a member of the Aryan Brotherhood or...
We kind of get into some of that. So in my mind, this guy has motive to do something. However, he was cleared as being a suspect. He had an alibi or anything like that. However, right after the family disappeared, Sherilyn's mother had a tip page. She was trying to find leads of what happened to them. And she had received a tip, an anonymous tip, that stated Sherilyn and Bobby were on a hit list from this white supremacist group. And she was a part of this white supremacist group, but she would take she would flip through this list of names that apparently these people wanted to kill. And then she would go look them up online to see if anything really happened to them. And this is when she found out the family was missing. So she put in a tip that, hey, this family was on a hit list for this white supremacist group that boarder, that tenant, happened to be a part of.
Gotcha.
So now, did they do something? How would they know that this family is traveling to Red Oak that particular day unless they either followed them? I don't know. Which, I mean, it's possible. But was that whole situation enough to warrant killing the entire family?
I don't know. White supremacy groups do crazy things all the time.
That's true.
So I don't know that it's out of the realm. To me, of the last five theories you've given me, this one makes the most sense.
That's true. I mean, okay, they could have also lured them under false pretenses to this area because they were more secure in that area, whatever.
And then they didn't know about the money being in the vehicle.
That's true.
However, Bobby received this money. He was using it to buy the land. And maybe when they left that first land that they were looking at, someone else approached them and said, hey, heard you were looking for land. I have this location way out here in the middle of nowhere that Bobby and... They take the family out there. They walk out to the state and say, look, it's this acreage. And then boom, done.
Yes.
And it was going to be it's just right up here. That's why they didn't bring the dog.
Mm-hmm.
To me, this one makes the most sense of all of them.
Yes, I agree with you. I completely agree. It does seem.
Now, laying them in a line and all that, if I was murdering someone, I don't know that I would take the time to do that. That seems very tedious unless they were lined up when it happened.
Yeah, but then again, why wouldn't they find bullet holes in Madison or in a Sherilyn? You know, if they would have done that, if that's how they would have killed them. I don't know.
They died in another manner.
Yes, that's true. And then, I mean...
Or he strangled the girl, the Madison and the wife, and laid them all down because he didn't want to see their faces.
I know. But you're right. This one is the most plausible.
Is there some sort of ritual? Or maybe what if this happened? Someone murdered them out in the land and someone else came upon this murder scene and then laid them as some sort of ritualistic of, I found these people.
Yeah. Let's lay them to rest in a dignified manner all next to each other.
Now the face down thing, I don't know about that. I don't know every culture out there. Is there a cultural thing? Is there Oklahoma is well known for indigenous people? Is there is there something in this area that's common, you know, a ritual of some sort that would allow them to, I don't know, carry on to the next life dignified? And that's why there's a flower on the girl, or, you know, something along those lines.
Yeah. It's just crazy. Just to recap theory so far, we have murder, suicide, two different ways, accidental death. We have meth heads. We have Bobby's father, witness protection, and starting a new life. Obviously have been crossed off because they were found. We have demon spirits, white supremacist group, which also includes the border / roommate killed them. We've got religious cult. That's 10 theories.
We don't have aliens yet.
We don't have aliens. 10 theories, 2 have been crossed off, but that's still insane. Mm-hmm. Okay. So now what possessed this family to leave the vehicle with all their belongings and their beloved pet dog locked in the truck? This is what I cannot get past. And I, your thoughts on the white supremacist group, that makes the most sense.
Now, how you corroborate that,
not
no
a clue.
Idea.
Yeah, because none of those mofos are going to talk.
No, not unless someone has a change of heart, gets out and is like, hey, listen, so you don't prosecute me for all the bad shit I did, let me give you the names of everyone that's done.
That's true. But then they still have to have evidence in that. And with this, they can't even prove there was foul play when it came to this, which is crazy to me because nobody dies in a line. End of story. To me, it should have been a homicide just based on the fact they were lined up. I one or two more theories that I think are, I didn't read about, but could be possibilities. Okay, what about like carbon monoxide poisoning or like black mold in the house that made them hallucinate and want to get away as quickly as possible? They were kind of out of their minds. I know.
Okay. Question. How far from their house were they?
So like 30 miles.
30 miles. So let's say 30 to 45 minutes driving if you hit some traffic or roadblocks or something.
Yeah. So I mean, it's up in a mountain, so they might have been curvy, take a little
or
bit
slower.
Longer. Yeah.
Sure. Okay. If you're hallucinating from black mold and you get away from that, does it?
I didn't even know
you could hallucinate.
I don't know. Mold. I'm just thinking of all possibilities because the fact that she's bipolar, okay, great, but he's not. But how is he still so paranoid that he wants to get off of the grid and he's having a harder time? They both seem like they're in a trance-like state. So if they're not on drugs, there has to be another explanation for their behavior.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What if he... Okay, so Bobby said he had a way to make money quickly.
Quick. Yes.
What if that had something to do with the tenant and whatever brotherhood he was a part of? And what if Bobby stole the money?
Oh my god, I never even thought about that. Yes, what if he did steal the money and whoever he stole it from came after him?
Yeah.
Okay, let's throw that theory in there too.
Oh,
I know. So I'm going to talk about this picture. We're almost done. I know this is a super long one, but there's just so much that is questioning in this one. Okay. So this is a picture of Madison. For those that are not on YouTube, we'll put this in our social medias, but this photo right here is everywhere. And it has been speculated wildly that Madison in this photo, she's scared. She has her arms crossed. She's not looking at the camera. Many people, even the ones close to Madison, say that this is very out of character for her to look like this. She loves taking pictures. So they believe if one of her parents were taking the photo, she would have been looking towards them. She would have been happy and smiling. She's a day in nature. So a lot of the family believe the parents did not take this picture. Which is, this was taken the day before the family went missing. I don't know her, obviously, personally, so I can't I mean, sometimes six-year-olds, they don't want to take their picture, even mm-hmm. if it's their mom or dad.
But I will say this body language is very standoffish.
It's very standoffish. Very. This picture was found on the Bobby's phone when they recovered it from the vehicle, and it was the last picture taken on his phone. So it's, I don't know what to believe. If the family, is the family trying to make more of it than it really is? Or are they like, no, this is not Madison that we know. She was just a happy girl, loved taking pictures, that type of thing.
But also, I don't blame the family for trying to follow every possible scenario.
Exactly. I agree. So,
especially with there being so many scenarios to this one already.
Yes. The family believes that they were murdered either by a cult, or they don't believe they were on drugs, but they do believe they either stumbled upon something or the cult-like behavior had something to do with it. To sum up this very, very long episode, and I'm sorry, honestly, that I just gave you all more questions than there will ever be answers to, but I mean, honestly, if this wasn't a murder-suicide or an accident, someone has to know something. And like we always say, relationships change. Someone may have talked, said something. So if you know anything, have any evidence, please let authorities know so that this mystery can be solved and this family can be, you know, laid to rest. Like, mm-hmm. all of this time, it's just crappy. And a little girl, like, just think of that. She's 6 years old. Come on. So if you have any information about the death of Bobby, Sherilyn, or Madison Jameson, call the Latimer County Sheriff's Office, and that is 918-465-2021.
Wow.
I know. Absolutely. I know. Once I read about this one, and I had heard of it before, and I even brought it up to my family in Oklahoma, and they had no clue about it, even though they live 30 minutes away. I'm like, I feel like you should know about a missing family.
Yeah. I mean, is it not at least on like Facebook pages anymore?
It's really not. Yeah. It's crazy that because they haven't ruled it foul play, or they don't know if it's murder, it's not really being investigated because they don't know what happened. It's like that. And I know the main sheriff that was on the case, he's moved on and he does other things now, but he said Madison's case will live with him forever because she was just such a little girl, and this was in a tiny town that none of this ever happens in. So he said it has definitely hit him very hard that he was never able to solve what happened.
Oh, man.
I know. Yeah. Whoa. It's just one of those ones. Lots of theories, no questions.
Yeah. No, all the questions, all the theories,
no answers. Yes. Yeah.
When you told me this one was a doozy, you weren't lying.
Yes, I know. And I'm like, well, I can't leave out this theory. I was like, I have to do all of them. Anything I ever read, I'm like, I have to put it out there because it could be an explanation, even though it's really not. So, yeah. That is Oklahoma. And I was shocked that I never covered it, or we had never really talked about it. I was like, I feel like I've
And that I've never heard of it.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
It just goes to show how many cases are out there, because
yes,
this is what we do for a living. And every week we're like, oh my God, like, how did we not know about this one? Or, oh my God, why isn't this one getting more coverage? Or, oh my God, what? It's just nuts.
We read so many or hear about so many, and then there's still so many more that have never been talked about. Mm-hmm. So
I will say that this year has been a great year for unsolved cases, though, because just in Oklahoma alone, look, they solve the Oklahoma Girl Scout murders.
I know. And we're going to do a slight bonus episode update mm-hmm. on that very, very soon, probably in the next week. Mm-hmm. I did want to give a shout out to, Harlow, Stephanie Harlow. Mm-hmm. She has an episode on YouTube. It's called Harloween, and it covers the Jameson family, and it's mm-hmm. very in-depth. It has images, and she goes into a lot of what I went into as well, but it is so good. It's over an hour long as well, so definitely check that out from Stephanie Harlow. It's the Harloween episode, which is adorable marketing as well.
Yep. She's great. I watch the Crime Weekly with her and Derek Levasseur a lot.
Yes.
So same. great people. So yes. Love that. And yeah, that's just... That's like, it? I don't know what else to say about it I'm still so shocked.
I know. And then I feel bad. Sometimes, like, we're always like, oh, it's wrapped up in a bow, but I'm sorry there's not even a string of ribbon in this case.
No.
Or there's even a million strings
for this.
Yes. There is literally so many questions. And I couldn't imagine being part of their family and having no freaking clue.
No clue.
I would recommend everyone go watch the YouTube video of them, of their surveillance video, because it's weird. It's very weird. I mean, I guess if you're in the zone and just doing work, but why do you need that much stuff?
I guess let's link that YouTube video in our show description so that people can watch or find it easy.
Yep.
And remember that we will always be there for you, no matter where,
no matter who.